This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
The House GOP finally unveils its tax plan. We go over what's in it on Tactics. Okay, well, apparently we're having some kind of technical error with our sound system. I'm not sure exactly why, but we will work on getting that fixed and see what is going on there. Hopefully we can resolve that before the end of the show, but nonetheless, did want to have several things to talk about with the House GOP. So it's important to really dig in and understand what this bill does, what the purpose of it is, everything that's going on and that's associated with it. Now, remember, this is not the final, because even if it passes, it still has to go through the Senate and still has to get the signature from the president. So this is subject to change. There is a possibility that even if this thing goes through without any amendments, even if it winds up going through as is, that it's going to change and possibly change quite significantly when it gets to the Senate. So there is a lot to consider when looking into that. A few things to remember and keep in mind when we're looking through it, but I do want to go ahead and get into the actual logistics of it, get into what's going on. And what this bill does is it is not the same as the Donald Trump tax plan. It's been adjusted. There are some things that you could say that it was probably based on the Donald Trump tax plan, but this is a different version of that bill altogether. And there are several things that the Trump tax plan did that this one doesn't, and vice versa. So let's go ahead and delve in and look at exactly what is going on with that. First of all, it is important to remember that even if this thing passes, that you are going to see some changes, but nonetheless, we need to know what's in it, at least for the moment. Right now, as the proposal stands, there are four major tax brackets. You have 12%, 25%, 35%, and 39.5%. So the top tax bracket stays where it is. The bottom tax bracket actually sees an increase. Again, this is something that I've criticized this plan for. It is unconscionable to me that the Republicans, even though if you're looking at it long term and looking at all the deductions that were added, there is a pretty solid chance that the vast, vast majority of people that were paying in the 10% bracket will actually be saving money, even though their rate has gone up. But A, just from an optics standpoint of Republicans actually literally raising taxes on the richest or on the poorest tax bracket is monumentally stupid from a political standpoint. And then on top of that, I'm just against raising taxes in general. So raising taxes on anybody is a bad idea, especially in our current climate. So the biggest boneheaded thing that they've done is they've included that 12% tax bracket. I was hoping when the House got a hold of it, they would look at it and say, no, we're just going to do 10. But unfortunately, that's not what they did. They actually raised the bottom tax bracket somewhat. Now, a lot of people that are seeing that 12% tax bracket now are going to see a big tax decrease. And the reason is, and keep in mind, all these are joint income. So if you and your spouse file together, it's your combined income. It's not just one income. Now, a lot of people that are going to be in that 12% tax bracket are actually going to be seeing a tax break, because while some people that were in the 10% are now going to be in the 12%, that being the lowest now, with the 25%, that's going to be only people making jointly over $90,000. So essentially, if you're pretty close to making six figures between you and your spouse, not just you, between you and your spouse, then you're going to be paying roughly a quarter of your income to the federal government, which is still ridiculously high. It's still immoral for you to have to pay a fourth of what you make to the federal government. But that is as it stands, and that is actually raising the threshold on that, which means a lot of people that were paying 25% are now going to be paying 12% instead. So it is a moderate improvement, at least in that one particular area. Then you've got the 35%. That's only for people making $260,000 or more jointly. So that's people that are at the very least upper middle class will be paying that 35% rate. And then they keep a fourth bracket available, which the Trump plan did not originally include. It allowed the possibility for a fourth bracket but didn't actually set one. So the fourth bracket now is 39.6%, so exactly the same as it was before this bill took it, before this bill was presented. If it passes, it won't change that at all. What it does change is the threshold. So what you're looking at is that 39.6%, but that's only for people making $1 million jointly or more. So a lot of people will be seeing a tax break. If you're making $1 million or more, your taxes are going to stay exactly the same. If you're paying that 10% tax rate now, you're actually going to see your taxes go up a little bit. So just a quick summary of everything that this thing does. Raises the taxes on the poorest, keeps the top bracket, but raises that threshold. And it has inflation adjustment clause. Now, the inflation adjustment clause, I actually think is a pretty good idea to help you understand exactly what that is. All these rates are subject to change. The percentage will stay the same, but the threshold at which you must pay them is going to be adjusted annually for inflation. So in other words, let's just say something horrible happens within the next year and the dollar gets devalued by a good deal. And now what used to buy a dollar's worth of good now only buys 50 cent worth of good. Well, if that were the case, then instead of that 25% bracket having a $90,000 threshold, it would actually double. So it would be $180,000 threshold. So it adjusts for inflation, which honestly I think is a really good idea. I like it. The only thing that I dislike about it is that it's going to be slightly confusing. The tax code is confusing enough as is, and so people will not know ahead of time whether or not they're going to be in one tax bracket or the next because it adjusts for inflation, and then they'll have to come out with the new rates. So the only potential pitfall that I see with the inflation clause in there is that it will be a little confusing for people, but I'd rather it be confusing and closer to being fair than I would be have it not be confusing. And inflation could cause somebody to pay a ridiculous amount in taxes, even though they're really not earning all that much. So the idea of the inflation adjustment, I think, is actually a good idea. Again, the only pitfall that I see with that is some people are going to complain that it is a little confusing. But at the end of the day, I think that it's probably better than not having one. The big thing, and this is the only thing in this bill that's really a game changer, something that I think it could actually spur on the economy, because the simplification into the four tax brackets, it changes things a little, but really not that much. I don't think that we're going to see a big difference from what we have now to what they are proposing. This is an exception to that rule, though. There is a 20% flat corporate tax, period. No delays, no sunset, no, well, we're going to do this cut now, but it goes away in 8 years like the Bush tax cuts or anything like that. No, it's just 20% flat corporate tax rate, period. Now, legislatively, Congress could come back and change this later, theoretically, but slashing that from 35% to 20% right now, taking us from being by far the highest corporate tax rate on earth to going to 20%, which is barely under the average, which would be 22% worldwide, that could have a real lasting effect. America has a lot of advantages when it comes to employment, because we have relative stability compared to the rest of the world. There's very little chance that something's going to affect our economy, at least from a military standpoint, which is why we enjoy that stability. I know that it doesn't always feel that way. It doesn't always feel that we're stable. But if you're looking at it economically, we're kind of the gold standard for stability when it comes to doing business. Also, we have a highly educated workforce to draw from, more so than a lot of the for sure the third world, and then a lot of the first world. We have that highly educated base. So there are a lot of advantages to doing business in America. The biggest disadvantage, of course, being that 35% corporate tax rate. So the idea that we would be able to change that by going to a 20% flat tax rate is actually incredibly significant. I think that there would be a lot of businesses that would be saying, maybe we could do business here. We already had several companies like Burger King, for example. I mean, it's a fast food burger place. You would think that it would be the epitome of American business, and it was for a really long time, but eventually they became a Canadian business just because of how insane the corporate tax rate is here. They couldn't they were having trouble making profit because of how much money they were having taken, and so they went to Canada, which has a significantly lower corporate tax rate of all places, even far-left socialist Canada. So this is really, really good. The 20% corporate tax rate, having that will really help us in the long run, and I think that that's going to be the single biggest thing that, I like about this tax plan. And if this goes through, I don't know that any of the other tax things that will see much of a difference economically. I think that going to a 20% tax rate could really boost the economy in the short term and possibly the long term. So lots to look into. We've got five or six other things that I want to go through that this tax bill does, and we will go there in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Bible is a book worth more than all the other books that were ever printed. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. I saw the phones lighting up here a little bit earlier in my earlier monologue. Love to take some calls. Unfortunately, everybody has for some reason dropped off. But look, if you're out there, if you want to call in, I do want to take your calls. I do want to hear what you've got to say. Before we do get back into the tax bill that the GOP has put forward, I did want to mention this. You can join us at News Radio 1440 at the Alabama National Fair on Friday, October the 27th through November the 5th. So wrapping up this Friday, live entertainment from the Brothers Osborne, Saturday, October the 22nd. Looks like we've also got the Hambone Express Pig Racing, Zabrini Circus, Timberworks Lumberjack Show, Scott's Magic Show, and more. There is a $25,000 giveaway on Saturday, November the 4th, along with 95.1 The Fox's live finale of Next to Rock. So that's coming up tomorrow. You can go to alnationalfair.org for more information. So anything you want to know, scheduling, tickets, all that information is right there, alnationalfair.org. Also, our sister station, Sports Radio 740, wants to help you win $10,000 from Hardee's. All season long, you have a chance to win big if the Auburn Tigers return the opening kick of either half for a touchdown. You can go to sportsradio740.com and register weekly for your chance to be our weekly winner. It is the Hardee's $10,000 kickoff payoff with Montgomery Sports Leader, Sports Radio 740. So we have no shortage of opportunities for you things to win that kind of thing because we love our listeners. We care about our listeners. Now let's actually get back into what we were talking about beforehand, which is the new bill that has been placed by the House GOP when it comes to their tax plan. This does a lot of things. We already talked about how it has four different tax brackets, and we broke those down. We also talked about the 20% flat corporate tax rate, which is a really, really big deal, something that I'm looking forward to, something that I think really will help spur the economy. I wish that, frankly, I'd be fine with it being 15% or 10%. I would be fine with it being lower. But that's where it stands right now. That's where we are. So when you're looking at that, that is the big news. There are several other things that this thing does. It increases the child credit for one. So if you have kids, you're going to get more money back for having each of your kids. This is one that is a libertarian in principle. I actually vehemently disagree with. But the thing is, it has nothing to do with people having kids or getting credit for their kids. It has everything to do with me just being against all tax credits, because I think that it should be either a flat rate or we should move to something maybe like the sales tax. So the fair tax, something similar to that. But the point is, either way, I'm against all the tax credits. But if we're going to have this Marxist graduated system to where there are different tax brackets and different incomes that we live by, even though I don't like that system itself, I think that this is probably a good thing for the system that we've got. It's kind of a weird thing to describe. It's almost like, well, I'd really rather not have a car, but if we're going to have a car, we need to have good tires on it. I mean, not that I'm morally objected to cars anyway. You know that I drive a truck every day. But my point is, it's kind of like you may not like the system, but you understand that because that's the system that you've got, there are some things that you would rather have within that flawed system than not have. So this is something that I would love to abolish immediately, but only under the purview of getting rid of the tax brackets and having a flat income tax for everybody. But just so you know, if you do have kids, you get deductions on your taxes for that. That is something that is going to take place. You're going to see an increase in that. There's a decrease in homeowners credits, which, again, principally, I would be fine with. I don't understand why the federal government is trying to reward people for owning a home, because that discriminates against people like myself who do not own a home, who just want to rent or maybe want to find some other living arrangement until I can afford an actual home that I would like. Somebody that's single like me that isn't ready for home ownership yet, that has no reason to seek after that. Well, when you're going through that, then you see this unfairly giving extra tax credits to people who do own homes. Nothing against people that own homes, you know, more power to you. A lot of people I know own homes, but at the same time, I don't understand why the government is trying to put forward that. Now, there is an unintended side effect that comes with this one that I do think you need to be aware of, whether you support it or don't support it. Millennials and people in my generation, a lot of them are like me, which is they aren't big on home ownership. And they don't much care for starter homes. I know that there's some exceptions to this. In fact, I'm thinking of a couple right now that does kind of have a starter home. But generally speaking, millennials tend to be a little more idealistic when they're talking about home ownership. And so they don't really buy small homes. What they do is they usually rent a home for at least a little while until they do get up enough money to get the home they actually want and then buy it. Or they do something completely different. They find some other living arrangements. They don't usually buy those starter homes much, and so that's why you're not seeing a lot of construction on those anymore. And because of that, and because that just tends to be the way the market works now, with young couples in my generation not really wanting starter homes, wanting to save up and get a bigger home that they actually want, that unintended side effect of not having a homeowner's credit, that's actually going to further that even more. So what you're going to see is even less construction on smaller starter homes that would be ideal for a couple, or maybe a couple and one child or something like that. You're not going to see many of those smaller one-bedroom, two-bedroom homes being built anymore, and that's part of the reason that that's going to take place. So again, this is just an unintended side effect. Whether that's good or bad, or you think that it's beneficial, I'll leave that up to you. Just be aware that construction on things like that is going to drop a little bit. It also decreases the credit for state taxes. So if you're already paying a certain amount in state income tax, then that's going to be a bit of a decrease for you. And lastly, it keeps the death tax but increases the threshold and sets a limit on that. We may get back to that in just a second, because I do think that it's important, but we're running out of time here. So take it away, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
The Christian religion is, above all the religions that ever prevailed or existed in ancient or modern times, the religion of wisdom, virtue, equity, and humanity. John Adams.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can tweet us at Tactics Radio. One big housekeeping thing that I wanted to issue before we go any further. Just based on my schedule, looking at it right now, it looks as though I will be able to be here, if not for the entirety of next week, the majority of next week. I do have one chemotherapy treatment on, it looks like, Monday, so if I had to guess, if there's a day that I'm going to miss, it'll be that Tuesday. I'm always a little shaky after that takes place, but we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, I'll be able to be here for all 5 days with you. The week immediately following that is going to be problematic, because I will be gone for an entire week of chemotherapy. I just wanted to give you all a heads up on that. I will miss that entire week. But don't worry, I've got some great fill-ins lined up for you. Brian Petters has already agreed to take a couple of days. Jody McDay has said in the past that she would be willing to do that. I haven't gotten in touch with her yet, but she said she'd be willing to take a day in the future. I may have Matt Clark and Laura Glidewell You may remember Matt Clark is with the Foundation for Moral Law. He said that he'd be willing to jump in. He just got back from Israel, so I'd love to have him come back and, if nothing else, talk about that a little bit. And then we also have Becky Gerritsen, who's also agreed to take a day, and she's on the schedule already. So lots and lots of great guest and fill-in hosts coming in for that week. So something to look forward to as I am there recovering and trying to get treatment. So hopefully that I can get better. That'll be entering my second round of chemotherapy, which they're hoping to only have to do three. So doing that, I am a little bit closer to having this thing under control, hopefully. Now, getting back to what we were talking about with the taxes, there was one quick thing that I did want to mention about the death tax. This particular bill keeps the death tax, which is a massive mistake in my opinion, but it does increase the threshold and sets a sunset limit on it. So what that means is, even though the death tax still remains, even if this bill passes, which it's beyond stupid to have a death tax, you're taxing, first of all, you're taxing money that's already been taxed once. Because if you're a person that has this money in a bank account or whatever, that is money that was already taxed when you earned it. So they already taxed it, and if you're wealthy enough to meet the requirements for the death tax, you've probably already been taxed at something near 40% when you were getting this money in the first place. And then just for dying and passing it on to your offspring or whoever you want to, really, there is a tax on that as well. So you are getting a 40% tax on, probably a 40% tax on when you earned it, and then you're getting a second 40% tax when that comes back. So that is a substantial amount, well over half when you add it together. It's not exactly 80% because, of course, that's taxing the amount after the taxation has taken place. But substantially more than half of your income going, and it's trying to prevent you from leaving things to your heirs. And the thing is, it affects so little people. Because generally the rich people, the millionaires and billionaires, which people always say that this is directly targeting, which it's really not, most of them figure out ways around it. They have either attorneys that help them give it to their kids over a longer period of time to where they're not giving it all in one lump sum and you're not getting the death tax on that. Or they have a trust or some other way of doing that. The only people this really hurts are the people that are barely within the limits of the death tax. And one big, big demographic that it really hurts are farmers. Because a farmer may not necessarily be rich, may not necessarily have a lot of assets and liquid cash, but being an ag major myself and having seen this happen to family farms, they may have, 400 acres, which is worth quite a bit if it were to be sold. But of course, the family wants to live off that. They don't want to sell that farm. But all of a sudden, they're getting a 40% tax on all of their assets when the owner of the land dies. And there are a lot of family farms that have had to just go under when that took place because the federal government had the death tax on it and they couldn't pay that 40%. So they either had to sell a portion of their land and, pay off that death tax, or they had to just give up farming altogether and do something else, which is a real shame that this bill really affects maybe the upper middle class and maybe even some people that you would consider middle class, but they happen to have a lot of not necessarily liquid cash, but a lot of assets in the case of a farm. And that really hurts them from that purview. Excuse me. So it does keep the death tax, but one of the things that it does is that it puts a threshold on it. It makes that threshold higher than it was beforehand, and it puts a limit on it. So I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, it's within the span of 4 years. Excuse me. I'm really having trouble here. Within the span of 4 years, this thing will go away. Now, if I had to guess, then this is probably not going to make it through the Senate, if nothing else, because of Suzanne Collins. Suzanne Collins has already said that if whatever bill is put up does not have the death tax in it, she refuses to vote for it. This should not be seen as a surprise to anybody. I don't think Suzanne Collins has voted for anything a Republican has put up since, the 1830s or something crazy like that. I mean, for goodness sake, her liberty score on conservative review is 12. And to put that into perspective, both Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker have a higher ranking with conservative review than Suzanne Collins does. So it's If I were a Republican, honestly, I would just assume that we're going to lose Suzanne Collins' vote on everything that we do. I think that that would be the more prudent and pragmatic approach to take, to just assume that Suzanne Collins is a Democrat and is going to vote with the Democrats the way that she always does, and just assume that we have 51 votes as opposed to 52. Frankly, I think just handling it that way would be a much smarter strategy to take. But that's just me, and I'm not running things. We've got the all-wise, all-knowing Mitch McConnell to thank for some of the things that the Senate does. So I would just assume that the death tax thing is not going to get in, and even if it somehow makes it past Suzanne Collins and they don't change it in the Senate trying to curry her vote, they're probably going to nix it later. So in other words, when this phase out over 4 years is going to take place, they're going to wind up saving it at some point. That's usually what happens when these bills have some kind of sunset clause in them, especially when you're going to have a new Congress in the White House by the time that takes place. I'm not saying that I know that for sure, but if I had to guess, that is what I would go ahead and put my weight on and say that that's probably what's going to happen. But let's go to the phones here. Actually, I don't have anybody on the phones. They just dropped. See, it's different when you don't have a producer. Joe, of course, being out right now for health reasons, not his, mine. I can't really be in closed spaces around people right now because of my immune system. But if, in case you're wondering, that's where Joe's been all week. Oh, it looks like we do have a caller on line one. So let's go ahead and jump to him real quick. Nope, still not there. All right. Well, anyway, let's go ahead. And I wanted to tell you, this is really my verdict on this. This is where I'm coming from. As far as this tax plan goes, I think that it actually does some good things, but it is at best a very minute improvement. So, yes, there are some things in this bill that I do personally enjoy, that I personally like. The corporate tax rate is the biggest example. Getting rid of the death tax, at least in principle, I think is a great example. But overall, this is a minimal improvement at best. And this thing is 430 pages long, which means it's incredibly overcomplicated. Again, there's some things in here that I like, but at the same time, it's just barely moving the football in any direction. It's okay, but at the same time, when we have complete Republican control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, there is absolutely no excuse for this mediocre, tepid, timid attempt at reforming tax code. I would prefer something similar to the Rand Paul or the Ted Cruz tax plans that they proposed, which were barely a page long. They were fair to everybody because they had a flat tax rate, and they would have resulted in unprecedented economic growth and spending from the general population. I don't know why we can't do something like that. We have complete Republican control of both houses and the presidency. So I got to be honest, I think that we should have done something like that, something bolder, something that we could have really hung our hat on and been proud of. But as usual, the Republicans did the bare minimum and started from a place of just maybe slightly better than something the Democrats would have given us if they put forward a bill. Let's go to line one. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Who is this?
Oh, it's just somebody listening to you a lot. I pray that your treatment's going to go well.
Thank you.
Question was, do you know what, when we keep talking about the death tax, where, what kind of money you'd have to be leaving to your heirs or whatever before that would...
The threshold is pretty high. I'll be the first to admit that. It's somewhere like in the, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm pulling this off the top of my head, so everybody double check me on this. I believe it's somewhere in the $5 million range, isn't it?
Well, that's kind of, I'd heard 3 to 5 or combined, husband and wife, maybe
I think six,
you know, but so.
I think it's somewhere about 3 or 4, and this one would move it to about 5 or 6, if
okay.
I'm not mistaken.
All right. I just listed all of it. I've said I don't have a whole lot of my buddies in that bracket yet.
So, no, me either.
I was curious. But anyway, good luck with your treatment next week.
All right. Thank you much. But yeah, that's what's going on. And a good question. Honestly, I would have to look that up. I may look that up during the break. But the threshold is pretty high, and that's why there's not a lot of people crow about the death tax. I believe it's completely immoral, just because you're taxing money that's already been taxed once. And second of all, that idea comes directly from the Communist Manifesto, because it tries to actively keep inheritance. That's actually the first pillar of communism. No more private property, no more inheritance. So that is a stab at moving closer towards Marxism. And that's why the death tax exists. Now, granted, it doesn't affect that many people. But like I said, there are some people that don't necessarily have a lot of liquid cash, but have a lot of assets like farmers that are really affected by this. In fact, I did have one personal story from that, a family that farms in Kentucky that had to deal with this, and they had to jump through a bunch of legal hoops to avoid completely losing their farm because they're not rich people. They don't live immaculately or anything like that, but they did have a lot of land. And because of that, the IRS did come after them when the patriarch of their farm was, you know, in danger of dying. And then they looked into it and saw legally, luckily he didn't pass. He was fine. But they looked into it and they were all of a sudden made aware of the fact that they better do something to avoid that, because had that taken place and had he passed away when he did, they would have lost the farm. And so luckily they've taken some precautions, some joint ownership and some things like that over the business, so that when that happens, it won't completely decimate them. But a lot of people get caught by surprise, and they almost did. And so the death tax does affect some even middle-class people that just happen to have a lot of assets. And really, it does need to go away. There's really no purpose in it. It's not like it raises a lot of revenue or anything like that. But my, you know, looking at this plan, this is what I meant by Republicans holding office and Democrats holding power. The Republicans have all the control in the world right now, but they're being tepid and doing the bare minimum here. The Democrats are throwing for 30 yards of play when they're in power and, you know, completing those passes and getting touchdowns. We're running up the middle for 2 yards every time and then having to do a three and out. That seems to be what always happens when the GOP is in charge of things. They do the bare minimum. They move the football a little bit. They don't really do anything to curb back the tide of progressivism. And the GOP does so little to do that, it's actually kind of embarrassing. But unfortunately, that's what we should be accustomed to by this point. I do want to tell you about our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Now, these guys, they know what they're doing. They've been in business for 50 years. People in the River region trust them, and they should trust them because they do a great job. They know what they're doing. They understand how their customers are. They know their customers. They treat them with respect. And, you know, they don't treat you like an idiot. Because a lot of mechanics, they'll try to stick you with things. They'll upcharge you. You don't get any of that at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They go, they look at your car or your truck or whatever it is that you need done. If they happen to spot something that they didn't know about beforehand that you didn't know about, they come to you first. They explain to you what happened. They explain to you whether it's a priority. Then you get to make the decision as to how to go forward. They don't just fix it and say, oh, and by the way, this is going to be an extra $800 because we found so-and-so. That's not how they handle things at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They put you in the driver's seat. They let you understand what's going on, and they help you. They make you feel like an expert, honestly. So whether you just need some new tires, or you need an oil change, maybe an air filter replacement, or you need major engine repair, regardless of what it is, go see my friends at Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway today. And by the way, there are some new details coming out about the terror attack that happened in New York City. We're going to get to that in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 8:10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, let me know what is on your mind. At Tactics Radio is the way to get in touch with me through Twitter. By the way, in reference to the earlier question from the caller, the current tax rate, and it changes every year, which means it must adjust for inflation. In 2016, it was $5.45 million. That was the threshold to have the death tax apply to you. I believe that this new Republican bill actually raises it to almost double that, is what it looks like. So it would be somewhere near $10 million. I'm not sure exactly what the rate is. I'd have to look it up, but it would raise it substantially, is the thing. And that's actually part of the reason that I doubt that it's going to make it through the Senate, at least without having a big change in it. But getting to what I was talking about right before the break, there are some bone-chilling new details about the New York truck terrorist. It's still unsure when he was radicalized. We still don't have that information. People have been looking for it, but we still don't really know for sure. But we do know that he at least pledged allegiance to ISIS. He considered himself an ISIS terrorist. And now we know that he had been planning this attack for over a year. So this wasn't just something that was spur of the moment. It's not as though he was just having a really bad day and then decided to rent this truck and go out there. This is somebody who had been planning and meticulously designing this particular terrorist attack and had been doing so for over a year. He was apparently getting updates from the caliphate online. I mean, getting it right over his phone is the latest suspicion. So on that, I really do hope that we're doing something on that as far as trying to curb them actually getting their orders out through updates on the internet. I don't know a whole lot about that. Counterterrorism is not my area of expertise, and most of the stuff that we are doing is probably under the radar anyway, which is a good thing. I don't necessarily need all the details on that if it's going to help them find and stop terrorists. But that's something that we can't know a whole lot about. But apparently he planned this whole route on Halloween for a reason. We kind of always just thought of it as being a random day that he went out and did this and it wasn't connected to Halloween. Actually, it was. He specifically planned this on Halloween because he had been Googling pictures of it. And apparently he was doing this specifically because he was hoping to kill a lot of children. This may have been inspired by the Manchester attack. Because keep in mind, in Manchester, it was at the Ariana Grande concert, which meant a lot of the victims were young girls, and that, of course, got a lot of attention and was seen as a really big tragedy, despite having relatively low casualty counts because of the nature of the victims. And it appears as though he was trying to do something similar, that he was trying to run over little kids just going out to trick-or-treat. So it is absolutely repulsive the way that this guy thought that he wanted to specifically target kids. He made a dry run on October the 28th, apparently had a truck and had seen exactly what it would have taken to get to this particular place. And by the way, you remember that we talked about there being a note in there, about there being a note in his truck pledging allegiance to ISIS and there also being an ISIS flag. Well, apparently the reason for the ISIS flag was that he had intended to kind of hang them off of his truck in an attempt to, I guess, notify and let people know that he is a soldier of the caliphate. So, incredibly evil individual. And, you know, what can we do with this? There's not much, but we could do some immigration reform, and hopefully we're doing something to try to trace ISIS's online activity. I'm a big privacy guy, Fourth Amendment guy, you know that, but obviously, that's coming from somewhere outside the country anyway. Hour 2 coming up. Have to dance.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Real heroes still exist, but sometimes even they need help. We go there now on Tactics. That's right, everybody. The weekend is coming up. Just one day until football for everybody. I'm really looking forward to watching the Auburn game this weekend. After a bye week, I've got 2 hours, or sorry, 2 weeks worth of pent-up football that I'm anticipating, but that's enough about the about what we have. I actually do have a very serious story to give you this morning, and unfortunately I didn't know about it until just recently, or I would have given it to you earlier, but I do want to just sort of set the tone here. there's this young lady who, and see if you can kind of piece this together, telling you the events that happened to her. She's about 12 years old at the time, and she and her sister sneak out of the house to hang out with a guy that they met. And he is an adult, has a car, over 18. And so they slip out of the house and go hang out with this guy. And he starts driving them. But instead of going to, you know, a football game or a movie or anything like that, he drives out into the woods and goes to a cabin that he has out in the middle of nowhere. There's no houses around, no way to get away or escape. They're miles and miles and miles away from their home or anything else for that matter. And he takes the girls inside. And one of the sisters, 12 years old, he rapes. Thankfully, this is not a situation where it happens to where there are years and years and years that pass by and they're captive by the psychopath. The daughter that was raped decided that it was her responsibility to take care of her sister, and so she and her sister take off and they are walking down the road that they came by, and they eventually do find help and are able to get away. Thank goodness. They find the guy, take him into custody, and they put him in jail. Not prison, jail. And he stays in a county jail for, about 9 months. That's right, for raping a minor, 9 months. And they had let him out early for something that has something to do with his mother's heart condition, that he went out to see her and didn't come back. And so this guy who raped a child essentially spent 9 months paying for it. The thing is, though, something that he didn't know is that that encounter resulted in a pregnancy. Now, this girl, once she finds out that she's pregnant, she has a choice to make. And this is according to her words, not mine. She said that she had the option of seeking out an adoption or keeping the baby herself, because to her, abortion was never an option. And when asked why, in an interview, she said, "Because my baby didn't do anything wrong. The circumstances of my child's conception don't make him a bad person." And so, in one of the bravest things that I've ever heard of, she decides to have the kid, is supported by her family, has to drop out of school, takes care of the child herself. Once she's old enough to work, she works and works very hard and is able to provide for her son. A little while after she turns 18, becomes an adult, she finds somebody that she wants to spend the rest of her life with. He knows about the situation. They get married. They're still not rich. They still don't have a whole lot of financial stability, but they work really hard and they raise her son as though they're the result of their marriage. And her son, the only dad he's ever known, because he's an 8-year-old little boy, the only dad that he's ever known is the man that married his mother. Well, this lady has been receiving financial aid from the government because of the situation in the Justice Department, and she has been doing this for years now, but she has to apply for something to make sure everything's in the clear. And when she does that, they ask her about the child's father. And so she, because she knows who it is, she writes down his name for the records. They said, we just need it for the records. And then they come back later, all of a sudden, a judge does and says, your husband is in, or your the man that raped you is entitled to visitation rights. That's unconscionable to me, that he has parental rights even after this takes place. And so now her rapist knows about her son, knows that he has a child, and has the information of where she lives. Now, thankfully, afterward, the judge reopened the case and said that he was unaware that this was a rape case, which I don't know how you can miss that, because she's a 22-year-old woman with an 8-year-old son, and I think that's right. 22-year-old woman with an 8-year-old son, and the man is about 33. So I don't know how you miss that on the math. But the point is, this young lady named Tiffany, she chose to do the right thing. She did what a lot of people more mature than her would have failed to do. Made the unselfish decision to protect her child. And yet she's being punished for it. And having to face her rapist again. So hopefully this gets overturned. One of the things that they're looking into having undone is that they want to move and they don't have a lot of money. They just don't have a lot of resources. And so they actually started a GoFundMe page. And by the way, in case you're wondering, I do have that link posted up on @TacticsRadio on Twitter. So if you want to help her donate to her, I'm sure that that would be appreciated. You can do that. But this woman is absolutely my hero. She has a strength of conviction that most mature adults do not have, simply do not possess, if something like that had happened to her. And on the legal side of it, I've got to say, here's a thought, and I don't think that this is too extreme. If you rape somebody, automatic loss of all parental rights. Because unfortunately, stories like this happen a lot more common than you think. It's not a super common occurrence. But when this kind of stuff happens, a lot of times the rapist is granted parental rights if it results in a pregnancy or a child being born. And so legally, that's got to stop. If you take advantage of somebody and violently rape them like that, that absolves, you have no right to that child as far as I'm concerned. And furthermore, even though they're hoping to get this reversed, this has completely turned their lives upside down. Now she's having to explain to her son that the court is ordering him to go meet his dad, and he doesn't understand because he's a kid. He's not like, you know, 4 or anything, so he understands something weird is going on. But the only dad he's ever known is the man who married his mother. He doesn't understand that his dad, you know, took advantage of his mom for him to be conceived. And she doesn't want to have to explain that to him, and I don't blame her. So this whole thing has thrown a massive, massive monkey wrench into their lives, and I just want to say I have an incredible respect for this woman. Because she understands that just because somebody did something wrong to her does not give her the right to hurt somebody else. That her child isn't responsible for what happened, and I'm not saying that she should have been forced to take care of the kid. If she had wanted to put him up for adoption, there are thousands of families that would have given that child a loving home and would have been happy to do so. I know some of them personally. But I think really the moral of this story is that the circumstances of your birth do not define who you are. It's what you do with the gift of life that makes you who you are. We'll be back in a minute.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. And I've got this story. We're trying to share some. We don't get to share a lot of really good stories because, unfortunately, so much of the news is negative. But I think this is a really interesting story. There's this guy named Vince Ousley, who is a investigator, a police officer in Texas. And he did what a lot of us do in our spare time, which is he just went on Twitter to catch up with the news of the day, see what was going on. And he happens to scroll through his news feed and sees the ACLU has put up a story about the state of Texas stopping a minor from getting an abortion without her parents' consent. Apparently, this was in a case not too dissimilar from the one that we had in Alabama a couple months ago, you may remember, where the person was the victim of rape and she is seeking an abortion, but the state of Texas halted her from doing so without parental consent. And so Mr. Ousley sees this and very short, very briefly, just retweets it and says, good. That's all he said. Well, this unleashed a Twitter storm on his account, which went on for quite some time. People were replying, why is it good? Why? And so asking him about this, and then he just simply responded, because I would rather a child live than die. Pretty simple, replied to that. And then, of course, that unleashed a whole other wave of incredibly just vile, vile stuff that they were talking about, comparing. I can't repeat most of them, as you can probably imagine. One that was incredibly distasteful is it compared children that are not yet born to feces, saying that, well, I hope you play taps every time you flush the toilet or something like that. I mean, just comparing a human life to being, you know, worthy of nothing, no more consideration than that, just absolutely throws me off. Some really vile people started responding to him and saying this. And after a while, one common thing that kept coming up, that kept getting suggested to him, is that these people that are, I guess, on the pro-abortion side of things, said that he should not be for forcing pregnancy onto a teenager unless he was willing to care for the child himself. Now, most people would have just dismissed this, saying that, because first of all, it's an illogical argument. Just because you're unable or unwilling to take care of the child yourself is in no means a repudiation on the fact that you want people to be allowed to live. I don't think that you have to be able to take care of every single person that you think ought to be allowed to live. There are people that I cannot take care of because of my financial situation or whatever, that I still think have the right to life. People's rights don't go away simply because you don't want to be held responsible for them. But regardless, take that out of the consideration. This guy, Vince Ousley, says, okay. And he opts to adopt this child. He apparently had already started the process with Texas, and he had a little bit of experience in it. So he starts the process of filing for adoption, and not just adoption of any child. He specifically gets in touch with the ACLU and asks them to put him in touch with the people that could help him adopt this child specifically. Now, they gave him the runaround and said, well, because it's a minor and because of confidentiality, we're actually not allowed to provide that. And he says, look, I don't want to, this isn't a trick or anything. I'm not trying to get to know the girl's identity. All I want is for you to put me in touch with her legal team. I don't need to know who she is, the Jane Doe that is mentioned in this story. I just want to be able to adopt the child if she is, you know, the state of Texas allows her to go through with it. So this is a guy who actually put his money where his mouth was. And I have a lot of respect for him for that. Got all the paperwork in order with the state to start the adoption process. Contacted the ACLU, did everything right. this is a person just like the person that we talked about in the last segment, like Tiffany, who I think has a great deal of personal conviction. And this argument that they were using against him about him not being willing to take the child into his home himself, this is a pretty common argument, actually, with the pro-choice crowd against Christians. But the truth is, it's really just not grounded in reality. I already explained that, A, you don't have to necessarily want to have to care for somebody themselves to believe that they have a right to live. I believe that everybody has a right to live. That doesn't mean I can take care of every single person on planet Earth. I neither have the capacity, nor do I think that it would have been prudent for me to have done so anyway. But that doesn't mean I don't think that you have a right to live. If you want to take the other side of that, and I'm not trying to do this as whataboutism, but if we're applying that standard, a lot of these liberal people are very much in favor of, for example, immigration. Well, if that's the case, then you can't be in favor of taking in refugees unless you're willing to personally house a refugee. If we're going by that standard, that's what we need to go by. If you're so worried about their well-being, then you need to be taking in the refugees. But here's the other side of that. Even if you take whether or not that's a decent argument out of the equation, ask yourself this. Is it grounded in truth? Are Christians really unfeeling and they're against abortion because it bothers them religiously, but they're not willing to take the children in? Actually, that's the exact opposite of the truth. In fact, the more and more research I did, the more I found that this was untrue. There are literally thousands upon thousands of Christian organizations specifically centering on adoption, and a lot of which specialize in putting together people that have unwanted pregnancies that prevent, you know, people that would probably get an abortion, and linking them up with good, loving Christian homes of people that would love to take care of these children instead of having them aborted. In fact, the waiting list for adoption of children sometimes can take up to 2 to 3 years. So not only are Christians willing to take care of babies that are unwanted, they have to go through a very expensive, lengthy process to do so and are still willing to do it. In fact, I personally know, both in my family and in my church family, several people that were adopted. One of my best friends, I don't think he would mind me revealing this, so I'm going to be a little bit vague about it, but somebody that I've had on the program before as a friend of mine was adopted and has a great relationship with his parents, has a great relationship with his siblings that are biologically belong to his parents. One of my best friends. And so the idea that Christian people, Christian homes are not willing to take in children that are unwanted is simply completely untrue and easily disproven. I personally know several people from my own congregation that have adopted. And when I say several, I don't mean one or two. I mean like a few dozen. So there have been a lot of adoptions that have taken place with Christian people that, if I wanted to and didn't mind revealing their identity, of course I never do that without their permission, I could rattle them off right now. So lots and lots of Christians are actually willing to do this. And I really love seeing that. And here's why. Being right is great. I'm all about being correct. That's a big part of my life. I think y'all know that if you've been listening to me on the radio for any length of time. The whole purpose of my show is to teach you how to make accurate arguments. But at the same time, while being right is great, especially when you're talking about Christian virtue, it has to be coupled with doing the right thing. Be hearers of the word and not doers of the word and not hearers only. And so this is one area where I think that Christians have actually done a pretty good job, but we can always do more. You see, being right is great, but we also need to be part of the solution. And this guy, Vince Ousley, he opted to be a part of the solution. He opted to be part of one of the people that says, no, I will take this child. I will take care of him. And it does mean that much to me. So props to Investigator Vince Ousley from Texas. You, sir, are a patriot, and I appreciate that you're living out the message of the gospel and that there are thousands of Christians all over the world that are doing exactly the same thing. We'll be back in a moment.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to add the more distinguished character of Christian, George Washington.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in and let me know what is on your mind right now. So, Planned Parenthood is apparently getting back to its roots of racism and eugenics. Because they tweeted this out the other day. This is from a couple days ago, I think. If you're a black woman in America, it's statistically safer to have an abortion than to carry a pregnancy to term or to give birth. Hashtag scary stats. Well, I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you're black, you could just go ahead and kill your baby before it kills you. That's essentially what they're saying. That you're safer having the abortion than you are actually carrying the child to term. These people just promote and sell abortions like a business, and it is unseemly. They promote it just like a product. They're actually using scare tactics to try to move a service, in this case abortion, by scaring people into saying, well, you know, it's you're actually in more danger if you carry the baby to term, so you should just go ahead and abort it. Oh my gosh, this is beyond wicked. First of all, it's not true. These stats are completely fallacious for three reasons. First of all, it looks at deaths from pregnancy on the whole population, not women that chose to forego abortions, according to the CDC. The CDC, not exactly a bastion of conservatism, and actually when this particular report that I'm referencing came out, it was under Barack Obama. Even the CDC said, yeah, those stats aren't comparable, not at all. You cannot make that claim that it's safer to have an abortion than it is to have than it is to actually go through with the birthing process, because these stats don't stack up with that, because it doesn't take that into consideration. So even the CDC itself has said there's no truth to that. Then the stats also do not factor in physical or psychological damage from abortion, which, by the way, even Planned Parenthood's own website admits that there are quite a few of. Now, not many women die on the operating table, but women could die from complications, especially if they try to give birth later after abortions, especially when you're talking about chemical abortions. Chemical abortions have had some pretty serious side effects on women, and I won't go into the whole report right now, but suffice it to say, when you watch those drug commercials and there's a list of side effects that takes up about half the commercial, that's kind of what it looks like with an abortion. I mean, some of the side effects of these, including, you know, becoming sterile, actually. Not being able to have a child again. Now, that's rare, again, but it does happen, and those are some of the side effects, and that doesn't even get into some of the psychological side effects that have been diagnosed and widely reported. Furthermore, another big problem with this stat is there is no mandatory reporting on abortion that is required. So in other words, obviously when a woman dies during the birth process and when a woman has a child, those things are all recorded. These stats can't really be trusted because abortion doesn't require any reporting to the CDC. Some people voluntarily report that information, and different states do from time to time. But as far as actually reporting each time an abortion takes place, that's not the case. Live births are always reported. Abortion is not always reported. And so you can't rely on the stats because of that reason either. And here's another reason that's not true. It has nothing to do with the stats, but it overlooks the obvious. Abortion is never safe for the baby. Sometimes abortion is safe for the mother, sometimes it is not, but it is always, if it succeeds, fatal to the child. And even if it's not fatal, it severely hurts them. There have been children that survive abortions, but usually they're in pretty bad shape when that takes place, as you can imagine. So that's one thing that it completely fails to take into account. Furthermore, death from pregnancy in America is actually incredibly rare. 8.8 women out of 100,000 die from pregnancy. So we're talking about minute numbers regardless of which stat that you happen to favor. It is incredibly, incredibly rare for women to actually die from childbirth in this country. It can happen. It has happened. It happens, like I said, 8.8 times out of 100,000, but that is incredibly rare. So the idea that it is somehow unsafe to have pregnancies and you're much, much, much safer with abortions is frankly untrue. Also, Dr. Ann Davis, a scholar of obstetrics and gynecology at Columbia University's Medical Research Center in New York. This is a direct quote from her. "We would not tell people don't have a baby because it's safer to have an abortion. That's ridiculous." This woman is one of the leading gynecologists in the country saying, no, that's completely ridiculous. There's no way we would ever tell people that. So Planned Parenthood, incredibly irresponsible with their tweeting, their rhetoric, what they're trying to tell people, trying to scare people into getting abortions. And so this is just incredibly disingenuous. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to line one. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Just wanted to say that isn't it interesting that the kings of regulation don't want abortions to be regulated as far as reporting is concerned? They want everything else on the planet reported and followed up by the government and given information given to the public on any other disease, anything else. But on this particular issue, it's one they don't follow up on.
That's true, and it actually goes along with something else that I've talked about several times before. Many different states, including Texas, have put up laws before that say abortions must take place in a hospital and there must be a medical doctor present, not a lab tech or not somebody. And Planned Parenthood and the abortion crowd always fights that. And I've always said, well, if you're so concerned with women's health and women's safety, which is what you always claimed that is your primary goal, why would you be against a law that makes abortion safer?
Well, Planned Parenthood is about the dollar sign more than anything else that could possibly be named.
Well, when 80% of your income comes from abortions, they kind of have to be.
Yeah. Anyway, good show today. Take care.
All right. Thank you. John from Millbrook, everybody. Thanks for that call. But yeah, this is a common problem that you have with the pro-abortion crowd. They will always claim that they are for women's safety, they're for women's health, they're for women being able to go through this process, and we should make abortions legal, safe, and rare. But when you actually come up with legislation that would help improve that, they say, no, we don't need to do that. It'll be fine. They can just have it in a clinic by somebody who, you know, just got on the job 48 hours ago. That'll be okay. They don't have to have a medical degree. That's fine. And the reason that they do that is because when it comes to Planned Parenthood, a lot of the Planned Parenthood clinics are just that. They're clinics. They're not hospitals. And they don't necessarily have medical doctors on staff. So it would shut down a giant portion of their revenue, and that's why they're against it. And that's sadly the reason that a lot of pro-abortion people are also against it. Even though there are thousands of facilities around this country that provide abortions, you could get an abortion in a hospital, but Planned Parenthood doesn't want that because it cuts into their bottom line. Also, Planned Parenthood has a long, bloody history of racism and eugenics, and this is just going along with it, because keep in mind, they specifically targeted black women on this. They specifically said, black women, you're the ones that are in danger, so you need to go ahead and get abortions so that you don't have to go through childbirth, because that's more deadly for you. Which, again, we've already debunked as being completely untrue. The founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, originally designed something known as the Negro Project, which was specifically designed to sterilize black women without their consent. So women would come in for different services provided by Planned Parenthood. It wasn't called Planned Parenthood back then. They've changed names several times since then. But they would come in to have that done, and they would sterilize black women to keep them from reproducing. Now, why would she do that? Well, Margaret Sanger was pretty candid on that. First of all, she had worked with the Klan before. And second of all, She said, colored people are like human weeds that and are to be exterminated. So, not a fan of black people, old Margaret Sanger. And even came up with programs to try to get black people, black preachers and ministers, to convince women that it was okay to have abortions. And she said, but be careful because we don't want word to get out that what we're really aiming for is the extermination of the black race, because we're trying to breed a nation of thoroughbreds. So this is Planned Parenthood's background. And you know what's really, really sad? Is that it's working. In New York City, more black babies are aborted than are born, which is a staggering statistic. And also, blacks, approximately 13% of the population, make up 35% of all abortions. The black community has been hit incredibly hard by abortion. In fact, they would probably be pretty close to getting, they'd still be a minority, but were it not for Roe v. Wade and the population that has been stifled by abortion, there's a really good chance that black people would be getting much closer to being one of the majority populations. I'm not saying that they would have outproduced the majority by this point, but they certainly would be a lot closer to it than they are now because of how much abortion has gone on in the black community. So the vision of Margaret Sanger, of a organization that sought to eliminate or at least greatly curb the population of the black race, has played out exactly the way that she wanted to years after her death. And the fact that Planned Parenthood is specifically trying to scare black women into murdering their own children to line their own pockets, y'all, that is beyond evil. That's the kind of thing that, that's Sodom and Gomorrah stuff right there. And the idea that we're allowing it to go on, that we as Americans have done virtually nothing to curb it and are actually funding this organization with federal tax dollars, it is reprehensible what we're allowing to go on in our own backyard. Chaplin's Report is up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. And we do have the Chaplain's Report up. I got a call during the break from Brother AJ, and he was just saying that it is unconscionable to him how people can support political candidates like Hillary Clinton that talk about Margaret Sanger being her hero when you look at the actual history and what the person actually stood for. And I'm not sure if it's willful ignorance or they just don't want to believe it, whatever it is. I do have to agree with them that it goes back to someone having a reprobate mind if they really do want to follow somebody who could support that kind of evil. But nonetheless, I did want to go ahead and get into the Chaplain's Report because, like so many other things, and I talk about this when I talk about the Bible all the time, there are no new problems. Problems take different forms. Problems resurface in new and unusual ways, but there are no new problems. Every problem that mankind has, there's an answer in the Bible because it's happened before. And this slaughtering of innocent children on a mass scale actually happens multiple times in the Bible. Let's look at Exodus 1:15-17. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Sephara, and the other who was named Pura, and said, "When you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and to see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but let the boys live. By the way, you can look at this story in the first couple chapters of Exodus, and you'll see that Pharaoh, when these midwives, when this plan didn't go as planned, as it were, then he had soldiers just take the children whenever they found them and throw them into the Nile and drown them. You see, it was Pharaoh's pride and his fear and his greed that let him slaughter thousands of children. He was arrogant enough to think that he could get away with it. He was fearful enough of the Hebrews of overtaking him that he justified it in his own mind. And he was greedy enough to want his slaves but not want them to be able to escape. That he thought that his best course of action was to kill innocent children. Later, he had all the male children, like I said, rounded up, scooped up, and then drowned in the Nile. So not even a quick death, just toss them in the water and let them sink. Our nation is living out the same wickedness, I'm ashamed to say. We're living out the same evil that took place 5,000 years ago. And unfortunately, we're doing it on a much larger scale. Every single day, almost 4,000 Americans are lost to abortion. 4,000 a day. God's judgment is always the harshest when people are taking advantage of those who are defenseless. God judges people, sometimes very extremely. But if you want to look throughout the scripture, God was always most angry and his judgment was always the worst on people when they were taking advantage of someone who couldn't fight back. And there is no one more defenseless than a child that hasn't been born yet. And I'd like to make a note here too. The reason this story is recorded in the Bible, the reason that we know about what was going on is because this was the time that Moses was born, and we all, of course, know the story. Because he was born and they were going to kill him, they put him in a basket and sent him down the river to save his life. Moses was a child slated for death. He's a boy that should have died based on this. And look at what Moses happened in his life. Look at the legacy that he left us and left the world. Not just the Jews, but everybody. He gave us laws. He gave us the Torah. The first five books of the Bible, he wrote those. He gave us the nation of Israel, saved them from Egyptians. And let's not forget, on down the road, because of him bringing the Israelites out of Egypt, eventually that led to King David and the lineage of Jesus Christ. So the legacy of Moses has given us an immeasurable, incalculable amount of good to the world. And he was somebody that was supposed to die. Somebody that should have died had they followed the policy of their leaders at the time. You never know what a child is capable of. How many children, how many cures of cancer, doctors have we slaughtered in the name of abortion? Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.